Morning is from the book of Lamentations, chapter 3. If you don't know where that is, go to Isaiah and go two books past Isaiah. That's Lamentations. Lamentations 3, 22 through 24. The steadfast love of the Lord never ceases. His mercies never come to an end. They are new every morning. Great is your faithfulness. The Lord is my portion, says my soul. Therefore, I will hope in him.
Good morning. The fact that John had to tell you where to maybe find Lamentations indicates that maybe this series will be beneficial to all of us, because I know personally before I began the study, I didn't have much understanding of what Lamentations was, other than what a lament was and so forth and how it applied to it. But that is something that we will cover over the next few times that I'm up here speaking with you at this time. In the Jewish calendar, on the ninth day of Av, which is usually in the July to August time period, the children of Israel would read a book from the Hebrew scriptures called, I'm guessing it's Ekah, E-K-A-H. And they assembled in the synagogue to commemorate the temple's destruction. Ekah means how, and that's an important part of what the book is about, because there were going to be questions asked in this book. How could God's city, Jerusalem, and God's temple be destroyed? How could it be that God, Israel's Redeemer, had turned his back on them and allowed these things to happen? How can the city that was full of people now be desolate, very few inhabitants living there? The how declaration is ingrained in the book itself. The first, second, and fourth chapters all begin with the word how. The few versions I looked at checked out that is how it works. And so we don't call it Ekah. We call it, of course, Lamentations, which also has a basis in the Hebrew language in relation to this book. Now, archaeological evidence indicates about 80% of the towns of Judea and in the villages there were destroyed in the final push of the Babylonian incursion. The destruction of Judah was on a massive scale. Much was destroyed, very little was left. Actually, if you just go back one chapter, Jeremiah chapter 52 talks about this destruction. It was an 18-month siege that caused people to starve, that were just killed off or either marched off on a 1,000-mile journey by foot into an exile. Only a few survivors were left throughout the land, and the temple of God was first defiled and looted and then finally burnt and destroyed. And so it's hard for us to grasp the severity of this event and what it meant on the psyche of the Jewish people, especially at that time, but in later generations looking back on it. Not only was the capital of Judah destroyed, not only was the freedom that they had enjoyed up until that point lost, not only were the majority of the people either killed or removed, but the temple was destroyed. That was a very symbolic sign, an indicator to the people that God had forsaken them. He was no longer with them. And so God had allowed his people to be conquered and killed. And to get an idea of what they were feeling, I want to read in Lamentations chapter 2, verses 20 through 22. Look, O Lord, and see, with whom have you dealt us? Should women eat the fruit of their womb, the children of their tender care? Should priest and prophet be killed in the sanctuary of the Lord? In the dust of the streets lie the young and the old. My young women and my young men have fallen by the sword. You have killed them in the day of your anger, slaughtering without pity. You summoned, as if to a festival day, my terrors on every side. And on the day of the anger of the Lord, no one escaped or survived those whom I held and raised my enemy destroyed. That should begin to paint a little bit of a picture of the emotions that this writer had, and no doubt were felt by others, of just the immense pressure that was on them, and just the recognition of what they had done to lead up to this. I like the he goes, as if it's a festival day, my terrors are on every side, meaning they're just everywhere. It's a crowded event here. But this cannot just be a book about the sadness of the people from when they lost their city and they lost their temple. And so if there's something more to it, we have to understand, then why was this book preserved? And there must be value to this book just beyond reading about the sadness of the people of that time. It appears that even Israel had a sense of this, as it was used and continues to be used as a memorial of the fall of the temple of Jerusalem. And I did a little bit of research and I think about 54% of the Jewish people fast for 25 hours during this time when they are reading about this. And so people still today take it seriously. There are still those faithful Jewish people that are remembering and looking back on this destruction. And so the book addresses the needs of who survived as they struggled to deal with their intense grief and pain. And so it's not merely a eulogy to the past. It's something we can apply to ourselves. And it's, like I said, it's often a forgotten book by modern day Christians because it doesn't impact our personal history. And like I said, John had to kind of give it a roadmap of where we could find it. But it's very useful for us today if we study it and we look at it, because it's God's book about pain, it's about sorrow, it's about grief, and the name of the book is appropriate for what it is. A lament is a cry uttered when life falls apart. And the Psalms themselves are filled with laments, and this book is entirely a lament. Laments are cries and prayers to God in which the speaker describes how their lives have become disoriented, how they've become impacted by these events. And people will often challenge God on that basis. I think we all can relate to this. We've all had times in our lives where things have gone bad and we said, God, why have you allowed this to happen? It is something that people will look at in that way. And so the feelings that you will read are feelings you'll probably be able to connect to in one way or another in your life, in times where you've been in grief or bereavement, whatever the case may be. We all can relate to something in this book and apply it to our own lives. And so the placement of this book really does allow our understanding to kind of be tuned into it. But the book of Lamentations wasn't initially put right after the book of Jeremiah. I mentioned that chapter 52 describes a lot of the things that Lamentations is sorrowful about. But in the beginning, it wasn't always that way. And while it's useful for Lamentations to sit next to Jeremiah, because it likely was written by Jeremiah, though I will add, modern-day scholars, because as modern-day scholars are prone to do, they like to discount anything that people before them said, or they like to just discount the authority or the authenticity of anything about scriptures. Modern-day scholars are not believers, they're skeptics. And so while they may say that this wasn't written by Jeremiah, they say it was maybe written by multiple anonymous authors. But we have to understand that it was written after the events recorded in Jeremiah, but the book of Lamentations is not a prophetic book. There's no prophecy in it. It is strictly an account of that time. And so originally the book of Lamentations, and how it was ordered in the Hebrew scriptures, it was located in what we might call the writing section, which was Song of Solomon, Ruth, Ecclesiastes, and Esther. But when it was, we talked about Wednesday night in our class, that when Alexander the Great's influence went throughout the world and Greek culture was becoming the dominant culture, that the Hebrew scriptures were translated into Greek in the Septuagint. At that time, this is when Lamentations was put behind Jeremiah. And so the structure of the book of Lamentations you know, clearly indicates that this book is a model for how to handle sorrow and grief that we may have in our lives. And first, the Book of Lamentation is unique in that it's five individual poems. We always talk about the arbitrary breaking of chapters and verses or so in books we read. In this case, it's pretty accurate because these are five distinct standalone poems. Each chapter is being its own. They're thematically tied around the destruction of Jerusalem and the destruction of the temple. But you could almost look at, you could kind of look at it as a mountain where each poem grows with intensity, reaching chapter 3. And then as we go down the other side of the mountain, until we come to the author's prayer, which is found in chapter 5. As you may be looking through your scriptures, you may notice that four of the five chapters have great similarity. They are the first, second, fourth, and fifth, all are poems with 22 lines. Now, something that may be not quite evident to us as being English-speaking people, our alphabet has 26 letters, but the Hebrew alphabet had 22. And this is what is known as an acrostic, where each verse begins with, in our alphabet, the first sentence would begin with A, the second letter would begin with B, and so forth, so you got down to Z. It would be a 26-line poem. In this case, with 22 letters in the Hebrew alphabet, the poem starts with the beginning and end with, well, begins at the beginning and begins with the last letter of the alphabet. And like I said, this is called an acrostic. Now, the third poem, which is our third chapter, actually has 66 lines. Now, it's not an acrostic in the sense that they do the alphabet once, then start it over again. Each letter gets 3 lines. So for us, the first 3 lines would all begin with the letter A. The next 3 lines would all begin with the letter B and so forth. And so the fourth poem then returns to the acrostic format. Now, verse 5 throws a bit of a loop, throws us for a curve. Because while it is a 22-verse poem, it is not an acrostic. There's no pattern there in the fifth chapter as it was in the first 4, where it's following a set pattern with the alphabet. Now, if you go online and use a resource like BibleGateway.com, where you have access to a lot of different translations of the New Testament, there is the New English Translation and the Holman Christian Standard Bible. Those are two that I was able to go through and see that in their writings, they actually show the Hebrew letter. They will break it down. So if you go online and look at those versions, you'll be able to see the Hebrew letter that corresponds with each line in the first 4 chapters. Oh, but then also if you look at chapter 5, you'll notice there are no letters provided because it's not written in that format. So we have to ask, why is the book written that way? Why is it covering these topics but has been chosen to be written as an acrostic? If you want to use a phrase in our language, it's an A to Z book on grief. It covers it all. There's a lot that we can pick out from here and apply. But this author is taking us on a journey. He's not necessarily wallowing in self-pity or doubt or guilt or anything like that. The poems have a purpose, and this journey is fulfilled through these poems as acrostics, showing order. Even in times of great grief, attention to detail was there. That could be really important to us as Christians as we look at maybe a common way to deal with another's pain and grief. And oftentimes when someone dies, I don't want to say they make light of it, but they try to make the family of the person that died maybe feel better. And they might say, well, you know, heaven needed another angel, or it was their time. It was something like that. People will say these things that they're in a better place. No matter how the person has lived their life, those types of things are often said at funerals. But you'll notice Lamentations has no interest in that type of treating the subject. It does not offer easy answers or inspiring words or anything along those lines. There's no multi-step formula that modern-day writers would try to come up with to help you through it. No, the structure of the book shows that it's not in a hurry to get you through this grief. As you read this book, you'll see that it doesn't offer empty sayings or just things designed to make you feel better about your situation. But here is where the value of Lamentations really can apply to us. The book of Lamentations shows a person who is directing their despair not at God, but to God. They recognized that no matter how we feel about a situation, and you know, we may feel what we should do and so forth, and many often do, is they'll blame God for the things that are in their life, what happened in their life. And that's not how we need to direct it. We may feel maybe it's odd to take our pain directly to God. And as Christians, we may think, well, I need to put on a happy face. I need to be encouraging to others even in my time. But we can't gloss over the pain and the sorrow we may be feeling. God wants our pain and grief shared with him. He wants us to come to him in those times. Just like a parent would want to hear the troubles that their children may be having, you know, at the end of the day, how was your day? They want to hear these things to help them maybe with the situation they'd be going through. And God wants the same for us. And throughout this book of Lamentations, we will read in this book how our sharing of our grief with God can help us. So when there's pain and there's hurt in our lives, that's even a greater reason why we shouldn't cut him out of our lives, but we should go towards God. Now, starting next week, I'm speaking again next week, and we'll do one chapter a week. So, you know, you think with starting today, we're over the course of 3 months. We will continue to look we'll begin to look through these chapters and about how what they are saying to us about handling grief and what they are instructing in that way. And we'll notice how the author's grief is given a voice before God, because this is one book that's a little unique in the sense that God never speaks in this book. There's no prophet speaking in the sense of like with Isaiah we just spoke about, who's relaying the thoughts of God. This book is applicable for us today for that reason. We don't have direct conversations. We don't get direct messages from God. And so because God is not going to directly speak to us beyond the word he's given to us, this book can help us. This book is not like the book of Job, where Job was spoken to and spoke to God, and there's a back and forth dialogue. But we can look at this inspired word that has been included for us to look through the eyes of the pain that the author is dealing with and help us in dealing with our own, because he was not having conversations with God just like we would not be having conversations with God. And we can see how he handled it. Thinking about them, their friends and family are dead, their city's gone, all hope is lost. And so we have to look at what this writer did, and we can apply it to what we should be doing. What will you do when you go through great grief? Some of those answers can be found here. This book gives you a voice on how to move through those times. And instead of reaching out and blaming God, it'll show us how we should be approaching him. Finally, this book helps us look forward to God wiping our tears away from our eyes, as we find in Revelation 21:4, where he says, he will wipe away all tear, every tear from their eyes, and death shall be no more. Neither shall there be no mourning, no crying, nor pain anymore, for the former things have passed away. So through these Lamentations, as we read these poems, we should understand that there will be a time where there will be no more sorrow. And that's only achieved by being faithful and being found faithful to God. And he will remove that sorrow and those tears from us. Only God can truly comfort. Only God can truly help through those times. And only God can provide an answer to the cries and the tears that we shed. Now you may be asking yourself, why did I have John read the verses that he did? those weren't necessarily verses of lamentations. Well, I want to share this because even through the grief that the writer was feeling, he was able to recognize. And if you look back at chapter 3, verses 22 through 24, I think there are six basic points that he makes there. God's love will never leave us. No matter the situation we have in our lives, his love is steadfast. There's no expiration date on his mercy. There won't come a time that we could do anything that, if we are honestly serving him, that God would not still provide those mercies. We can look forward every day to the love and mercy that he has for us. We're not going to wake up and find on a Tuesday that love isn't there for us. No, these verses tell us that every day those things are available for us. His faithfulness is greater than anything we can comprehend. Our faith can fail at times and can have struggles. His faith is great. It will never fail. And then we learn that all these attributes of God are able to fill us. I really wanted to read about what the portion meant. And it really just means it can fill us. It can provide everything we need. And so these attributes that we see here in God allow us to survive and subsist on that. And then finally, because of all these attributes, despite whatever our present condition might be, we find here we can find hope in him. Hope lies in the Lord, and regardless of what may be happening in our lives, he's there for us and can provide that hope. We'll begin next week with chapter 1. I won't be going verse by verse just because of time that's there. So I would encourage you to perhaps read chapter 1, the 22 verses next week, prior to next week. And as we go through and talk about that, we can have a good understanding of that chapter. At this time, Brother Mike will lead us in a word of prayer, and then we will have our morning class.